Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the August 26th edition of Commodity Week.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Pro Farmer finished up its crop tour and the market rallied sharply on the last day of this week. We'll talk about new contract highs in corn and beans today on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, Pro Farmer editor Chip Flory will join us fresh from the western leg of the Midwestern Pro Farmer Crop Tour. Our panelists in studio today include Matt Bennett with TGM out of Windsor, Illinois, Ellen Dearden from AgReview from Morton, Illinois, and Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from Champaign, Illinois.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, let's start today's program with this simple question. Why was it that on Friday the market rallied so sharply? Ellen Dearden.
Well, I think the Pro Farmer Tour numbers that came out late in the day kind of confirmed what farmers have been talking about for weeks. But when you lower the projected U.S. corn yield by 5 bushels to the acre without even having talked about the number of harvested acres, which we already think are too high, you're going to get the market's attention. The other thing is we had Fed Chief Bernanke come out earlier in the day and say that basically there's no need for any kind of a stimulus right now, but certainly put that on the back burner maybe for an October type of a deal.
Bill Mayer?
Yeah, those are a couple of factors. There are a lot of them today, that's for sure. I think a couple of other things were we had options expiration, which I think there were some people that kind of got short sitting there thinking, well, my 750s aren't going to be in the money, and all of a sudden they were. But I thought the bigger factor really this morning was probably the we made a sale of 365,000 metric tons of corn. Everybody kind of thinking we're starting to ration usage, and, you know, that was kind of a single, well, somebody's willing to buy it here.
And Matt Bennett.
I'd agree with what both of these guys said. And I think, you know, like Bill said, whenever you have someone come in here buying corn and people are talking about price being so high that we're rationing it, it's got to raise your eyebrows. And I think, you know, with the Pro Farmer Tour coming out and then seeing that happen, it's got to make you wonder who exactly was buying and why they were buying today. To me, it might have something to do with the fact that most people are finding out here in the short run just how bad it is in some fields and, you know, that our supply is going to be quite a bit tighter than what we thought it was going to be.
Is your suggestion that it was speculators buying today?
No, I don't think it was speculators, but I think that whoever was buying it, the timing of it to me was pretty interesting, and I just feel like, you know, we've said if China gets a chance for a dip anywhere here in this corn market, there's probably a good chance they might step in and buy it. I know that they've been talking about buying a fair amount of feed wheat, but if corn has a dip, I certainly think there's going to be people such as them that are going to be ready and willing buyers.
I think we should mention, too, we did see the cash market firm up, nearby cash market firmed up, and we're seeing some pretty good basis levels out in the country here.
Just 12 under this afternoon from Ludlow, which is not too far to the north of us here, so the cash back market is, and that's 12 under for new crop,
yeah.
Not the old crop.
The old crop was even a little bit firmer.
So a couple of things happened this week. Of course, Pro Farmer, and we'll talk with Chip Flory a bit later. We mentioned the numbers, but not what they actually were. Average yield from Pro Farmer at 147.9. They say on 12.484 billion bushel, or that's a 12.484 crop. But do make note that they expect to lower their harvested acres at some point, and that they use the August 1 number. So we'll see what happens with that. Their soybean figure showed, let's see, where is that? The Pro Farmer U.S. soybean figure was a 3.083 billion bushel crop on a 41.8 number. 41.8, a little bit higher than what USDA has on its average.
Yeah, that was up about half a bushel per acre, and I think the market absorbs that kind of information reasonably well. I still think there's an awful lot of question. Pro Farmer, you know, counts pods on this report. They're not really looking at yield. And we got the pods out there, but we need the rain to fill them out.
Last week on this program, Commodity Week, a couple of our guests were thinking that needed to be cautious. $7 and $13 cash sales would be okay. Everybody agreed, not today then, but that when the combines were rolling. Has that changed this week? And did you agree with it to begin with?
Well, I think it would be foolish maybe to argue with a $7 sale on corn or $13 sale on beans, assuming yields are at least halfway decent. You know, in my opinion, a guy that feels comfortable with what his yields are going to be, $7 corn is excellent. But, you know, the way I'm looking at this thing, most of us knew, I guess, that as far as production went, we were going to get some surprises coming up, maybe a little bit more of a surprise today than what most people thought that we might have. You know, as far as if you're a little bit comfortable with what your production is, I don't see anything wrong with pushing some sales, considering we're considerably higher than 7 and 13 as we sit here.
September corn this week at a high price at $7.55. It's low in Chicago. Overnight day trade, open outcry, and electronic was a 7.11.5. And the September settlement price was up 41.5 cents for the week. It's $7.52.5. December Friday to Friday finished 41.75 cents higher at $7.67 in the corn market. You mentioned that there was a sale, an export sale made. I'm wondering, where do we find a rationing process in this marketplace?
Well, I think the market in general is asking that question, Todd. And I guess I would be one of those earlier in the week that felt like we were seeing some rationing and that there probably was a good chance to see a little bit of a correction in the market. But and I think we are. I think we have cut back usage some. But I think with that in combination with the numbers that were coming out on the supply side, maybe we haven't done enough. And that's really where the question is now. I think we have the knowledge that we've got a short crop, not sure exactly how much yet, but how much are we rationing and what is enough? That's really the question.
Has the livestock sector thought about rationing? For instance, we have Tyson cutting back on the market weights. We saw, I believe, one of the poultry firms in the South thinking this is a bad deal for us. And then if you could work in all those cattle that are coming in from the Texas and the Southern Plains, and what does that mean? Because it's got to mean big, at least up front, usage by the cattle folks.
Right now, we are cutting back poultry numbers. Hog guys are still making money. Cattle guys, we're seeing that distressed movement as, you know, we're moving cattle around, but we're not, you know, pushing them through. The weights are coming down on the cattle. So I think we are seeing some cutbacks in demand on the livestock feeding. We're certainly adding wheat to rations where we can do that. But it's not wholesale yet.
When will it become wholesale? Do you have a price tag or do you know?
I don't know. I don't know if the number is $8 or, you know, $7.80 or $8.50. I have no idea.
Do we need to be concerned when folks come back from Washington to Washington, D.C., when Congress comes back?
Well, I think that there are certainly people that feel that way. And, you know, it's really tough to say. There's so many areas of the ag economy that are going to be affected if we go ahead and keep taking this corn market a whole lot higher. Livestock people, there's definitely implications, as Ellen said. And, you know, also with the ethanol market, you know, there's a whole lot of questions to be answered as far as where are we going to go. Most people think the mandate's safe, but there's really no telling what the government may do. Are they going to allow us to continue exporting a whole lot of ethanol out of the country? I mean, there's things things that they could do that would definitely change the dynamics of the ethanol market. So, you know, any time that our legislators come back into session and there's quite a bit going on as far as what it is costing for our food, you know, and anybody that wants to talk about that is certainly going to say, you know what, maybe we need to look at doing something to ratchet this price back a little bit.
So pins and needles, but still today we're at a marketplace that is high-priced for corn and high-priced for soybeans and doesn't look like it's going to turn downward anytime soon.
No, it doesn't. And, you know, if you look at the charts tonight, it looks like we've actually had a breakout here to the upside. But it's a moving target on the rationing there, Todd. And one of the things that happened today we didn't mention earlier is a sharp reversal down on the dollar index. And that makes the grain and soybeans cheaper for those overseas trying to buy them.
September soybeans this week, a high of $14.18, a low at $13.62 1/4. Settlement price up 55 cents at $14.14 3/4. November bean settled at $14.23 1/2. It finished 55 cents higher, and that's where the breakout came, above that $14 level. Beans now set to move sharply higher?
It would certainly look that way. I would want to see a confirmation next week to continue to see a couple of closes over 14, but I would say that you're looking at probably that 1475 to 1480 level, according to the way I look at things on the chart.
I don't think it's going to come in one fell swoop, however. Usually when we have a breakout, you know, my first upside objective is around 1440, but usually what we'll get is kind of a backup and take another look at that 1411, maybe down as low as $14, to try to convince people that the upside breakout is just a fake. And so don't be too nervous if we should see some kind of a pullback in here.
Yeah, I think that certainly could happen. I'd agree.
Well, I wouldn't argue with it one bit. I think that a whole lot is to be known still, or to be learned still. You know, weather-wise, it doesn't look like we've got a whole lot of chance for rain in the areas that really need it. And if you continue to have that dynamic, boy, there's a lot of uncertainties out there. You talk to farmers that say we've got quite a few pods and BBs inside them. And, you know, it's a little bit scary to know that there's such a broad area of Illinois and even southeastern Iowa. I've heard them talk about the fact that they're fairly dry. You know, there's a lot of bushels there. So as long as that remains, I don't think that we're going to see a huge setback, but certainly something to kind of make the technicians feel better about this breakout may occur.
I'd like each of you to take up next year's crop, corn and soybeans, and potential sales for either one of them and reasons to or to not do that. If you could, please, Bill, we'll start with you.
Well, I think one thing that I question or get a question on is, you know, if you have inputs that you can lock in and should you sell some crop. I mean, I think that's a legitimate way to approach it. If you're locking in profits, that's always good. But I guess I'd much rather, as we approach that 2012 crop, figure out some way to come in there and lock some floors in with some upside potential rather than just coming in and selling what is seems to be pretty wide basis levels and in the cash market where you really can't be flexible.
I think the wide basis level says to me that absolutely we have to look at hedged arrives or we have to look at board sale. I've started selling some new crops, some 12-crop corn in this 650, 670 range. I haven't done anything on the beans. I don't like the discount that both those have to the 2011 crop, but I think it's a place to get started, particularly for guys that have locked in inputs.
I would agree that, you know, whenever you look at the inputs and you look at how many bushels it takes to actually pay for those inputs, a farmer that's growing corn next year certainly needs to think about a way that he can go ahead and cover the inputs because, you know, when you can do it for less bushels than what you've been able to do it for the average of the last 5 years, you should do so. And I'm not saying they need to make huge sales, but I'm like these two. I think some form of protection. I don't really like a, you know, 45 or 50 cent basis level for next fall, a guy to put too much stock in that right there. There's different ways that he can play this thing, but I definitely think we should get some sort of protection, whether it's cash sales or, you know, over-the-counter products or maybe even, you know, hedge windows.
We'll ask about feed needs in just a second, what producers ought to be doing if they need to book some of those or whether they can wait at this point. September wheat futures, a high of 768.5 for the week, A low at 7.30 and three quarters. Settlement price up 31 and a half cents at 7.62 and a quarter. July of next year, 8.35 and three quarters, up 30 and a half cents. August live cattle, 114.30, unchanged on the week. September feeders at 132.60. They were down $1.20. And the October lean hogs for the week at $87.10, $1.27.5 lower. What do livestock producers need to consider?
They need to consider whether they're going to have enough feed, whether they're going to stay in business feeding livestock. And I think those are some big questions that are out there for guys in this Midwest area.
Do they need to? They really need to consider whether they're staying in business. That they need.
I think so. And there's also going to be a tremendous amount of silage cut this year for the livestock guys, and just because the amount of down corn that's around, and so that may kind of bide a little time and help stretch some of that feed, too.
I guess for the most part, I would think that we want to stay pretty much hand-to-mouth, but the problem that comes in there that I've ran into is, especially in central Illinois and some of these areas that are so dry, is a quality issue, and assuming that you can get good quality corn as you go through the year. And I think that you may have to deal with buying cash corn for a ways out just to assure that.
That's Bill Mayer. He's with Strategic Farm Marketing here in Champaign, Illinois. Ellen Dearden with AgriView, Morton, Illinois. Spoke before him. Matt Bennett is in studio as well. He's from TGM in Windsor, Illinois. When we return here on Commodity Week, we'll talk with Chip Flory. He's in Iowa and fresh off of the Pro Farmer Crop Tour.
I'm Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey at the Prairie Research Institute on the campus of the University of Illinois. The statewide average temperature for the week was 75.5 degrees, 2 degrees above normal. Highs range from the mid to 80s in northern Illinois to the upper 80s and lower 90s in central and southern Illinois. Nighttime lows range from the upper 50s in northern Illinois to low 60s in central Illinois and upper 60s in southern Illinois. Rainfall totals for the week range from 1 to 2 inches north of I-74. However, the totals drop off rapidly southward, with many areas in southern and western Illinois receiving little or no rainfall. The statewide average rainfall in August as a whole is 1.9 inches. That's 63% of normal. The U.S. Drought Monitor has labeled central Illinois as being in moderate drought. The pattern of warm, dry conditions is forecasted to continue for the next 2 weeks with no organized rain systems on the horizon. We should see low humidity levels and lots of sunshine. Highs will be in the upper 70s in northern Illinois, mid-80s in central and upper 80s in southern Illinois. Lows will be in the 50s. The 6 to 10-day and 8 to 14-day forecast call for above normal temperatures and below normal precipitation. For the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign, I'm Jim Angel.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the August 26th edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. In studio with us, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing, Ellen Dearden of AgriView, and Matt Bennett from TGM. Chip Flory from Pro Farmer is on the phone line with us to take up, well, mostly the crop tour he just finished up. Not only the western leg that he guided, but also the eastern leg. Thanks, Chip, for making time for us this afternoon.
You bet, Todd.
Can you tell me about your numbers, please?
Okay. You know, just to make one thing really clear again, and we start with this every year, the crop tour numbers are one set of data that we work with. But the crop tour and the scouts that were out there had absolutely nothing to do with the estimate that we are putting together, okay? We use the data, but we don't want to tie the scouts to our number just in case they disagree with it, which I'm sure that some of them probably do. When we were all done, the Pro Farmer corn yield estimate was put at 147.9. Of course, we put a 1% plus or minus range on that, so that puts it at 146.5 to 149.4. That puts the crop at 12.484. And, you know, just plain and simple, I've been getting texts all afternoon, you know, that that's not enough corn. They believe the number. They believe the estimate, the farmers and pro farmer members that have been texting me. But they're just concerned that we're not going to have enough corn for to take care of some of the issues that you guys were talking about. I mean, it's just sad what's going on in the poultry industry. It's the cattle industry seems like it's going to be changed forever after this. And, you know, we're going through a game-changing period in agriculture right now because of the way that we built up the demand for this stuff. And we've had a couple of tough years in a row, and we're going to find out just how the market is going to deal with that after having two down years in a row.
Chip, tell me about your harvested acres on corn.
Yeah, we stayed. We used USDA's August 1 number. Okay, we're digging through. We are still digging through the FSA data that came out last week, the certified acres. I can tell you right now that it looks to me like, based on what the data that is in there and what we've been able to dig out of it, is that corn harvested acres are probably going to be down, gosh, you hate to even say it, but 400,000, 500,000 acres from USDA's August 1 number. Bean acres are going to be down some as well, 300, 350,000, something like that. So we've got more work to do on this crop estimate. And Todd, I appreciate you mentioning that when we put the estimate out, we said that we are using the USDA harvested acreage numbers, but we believe that USDA will have to lower those harvested acreage estimates at some point.
Yeah, Chip, I was at your meeting at Bloomington on Tuesday, mm-hmm. and one of the things that surprised me, I guess, was the low pod counts in the beans in
yeah.
some parts of Illinois. What was probably the biggest surprise to you looking at it from an overall standpoint?
Couple of things. Overall standpoint on this bean crop?
Well, on just the tour in general.
On tour in general? Okay. The thing that probably surprised me the most was how dry it is up in Minnesota. I knew that it was dry. I've talked to a lot of guys up there. Boy, we're getting dry down here, Chip. You know, and but you always hear those stories. When we got into south central Minnesota and saw just how dry it was, and not only that, but just how much yield potential that crop had built before it got too dry. It's just heartbreaking. Those guys have lost 30, 40, 50 bushels an acre, and that is not an exaggeration in the hardest hit areas. And probably the driest one is right there where we were meeting last night in Austin, in Maurer County. It was absolutely smoked, and that corn was tipped back. You're looking at light test weights, light ears. You're looking at a whole bunch of different problems out there with that crop. But it just kind of built as we moved across the southern part of the state, and it was just, and it was so frustrating because when we started out in Sioux Falls, we were in great, everybody on the Western Tour was in a great mood because we were out there, we were going to be the ones that were going to find all these bushels that were going to offset all the problems that you guys are having out east, okay? Mm-hmm. Then we go through South Dakota and northeast Nebraska and say, well, you know what, okay, we didn't really find it today, but tomorrow will be better. We'll get into southeast, all that irrigated corn, everything's going to be just fine. Go through Nebraska, and we were down in Nebraska. And I don't think anybody really expected that. But the reason that we're down in Nebraska is because we were short two or three ears per every count that we made. Our ear counts were down 2% from a year ago, and it's not because we're putting less seed in the ground in Nebraska. Those guys have had four good dryland crops in a row now. They're planting more aggressively, trying to hit a home run even on dryland fields. So they're putting more seed in the ground, but we just didn't get the ears this year. And the scary thing is, guys, the stalks are there and the stalks are blank. And so it was how that seed was put in the ground. We got some ragged emergence. That stalk that doesn't have an ear on it might have emerged 5 days, 6 days, a week later than the two guys standing next to it. And all year long, those two guys standing next to it had just been beating him up and taking everything that he needed to make an ear. And so now we got a stalk and no ear out there. And that problem continued on into on into Iowa as well. And think about it. I think it was the second week of May. Iowa corn planting progress increased like 62 percentage points or something like that. It was some crazy increase. Well, you don't put that much seed in the ground that quickly by doing everything exactly right. You do it by dumping seed in the hopper and going as hard as you can go. And it looks like there might have been some issues out there with how that crop was planted. I don't want to call farmers sloppy. They were in a hurry, and there was a reason that they were in a hurry. Okay, but we just need to be really careful when we're putting seed in the ground, because we saw the evidence of what happens when you don't do it right.
Yeah, Chip, a couple things. First of all, do you see very many widespread pollination problems? And then second of all, I'm in the elevator business, and I don't know if people realize just how big of an issue this test weight thing is going to be. If you could just shed light on what you've found.
Yeah. Okay. First off, on the test weight, and you'll have to remind me of your second question, or the first part of the question here in just a second, but on the test weight, all the experienced scouts that were out there on the trip generally agreed that this corn crop is probably going to weigh similar to what it did in 2003 and 2010. Those are 2 years that we've got some similarities between with the growing conditions in 2011. They're not perfect matchups, but they're close enough to suggest that we're going to see stuff like that. And, you know, last year's corn weighed light. The ear weight was light. 2003, the ear weight was light. So that lighter than normal ear weight was played a role in our estimate there at 147.9 bushels. Now, what was the first part of the question?
I just asked if you saw any widespread pollination problems.
Yeah, you know what? No. We saw some, but, you know, pollination problems are really pretty simple to identify. It's not tip back. We got everybody understanding that tip back ear is not a pollination problem unless it never had a berry on it, okay? So we had everybody understanding what to look for. And pollination issues, we might have spotted them in 1%. No, not even 1%. What am I saying? There's no way that it was 1% of the 1,172 corn samples that we pulled. There were problems out there. I'm not saying that there isn't, but most of the heat stress, is going to be reflected in that smaller kernel size. It's just too bad. You know, last year we had the same doggone problem. This year we're going to be looking at a kernel that, instead of taking 90,000 kernels per bushel, it's probably going to take somewhere in the range of 95, 96, 97,000 kernels per bushel to get to your 56 pounds.
So, Chip, are you surprised and impressed, I guess, with the hybrids that they were able to have the kind of pollination we had, considering all the different people saying, man, we're really going to have some issues with pollination this year?
And how quickly this crop pollinated. It happened so fast. It happened so fast on pollination. It happened over a very short period of time. I am impressed by the way the crop pollinated.
Chip, thanks so much.
You bet.
Chip Laurie is editor at Pro Farmer to tell us about the crop tour. A final word from our folks in studio. We'll start with you, Matt Bennett.
It looks like we're going to have great prices going into this fall, so just enjoy the harvest and be safe.
And Ellen Dearden?
We've got another up week ahead of us, and I think we ought to be looking seriously at what our crop conditions look like in the field.
Man, Bill Mayer.
Well, I think we had a lot of inputs this week into the marketplace, a lot of things happening, and I'm sure we'll have a lot of things next week, and it may be a different story completely as we go forward.
Thanks to our panelists in studio, including Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing, Ellen Dearden from AgriView, and Matt Bennett of TGM. That wraps up this edition of Commodity Week. Be sure to visit us on the Farm Progress Show site next week. We'll be in the University of Illinois tent, not too far to the right of the main gate.
AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Hey, Chip. I didn't think.
Yeah.
Oh, you are there.
Yeah. Yeah. I just put it on mute there.
Oh, that's okay.
Yep.
Hey, I was going to follow up with a question for you. Oh, on the, and maybe you can answer this one too, because you asked the light test weight thing.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is that just a problem of just volume and not knowing how many bushels are actually there when you're looking at it? Or does it create another problem somewhere along the lines? Because 56 pounds is 56 pounds.
Right. You know, and you guys might be able to explain this better than what I can, because
I know I'm going to have to a lot of times in the coming months. So
yeah, you know, and last year, you know, you talk to guys and they say, what do you have for test weight? And a lot of the answers are 56, 57 pounds. But the kernel was small. It just took, you know what I mean? That, and you can explain it, that canister that you use for your test, it's not limited to how many kernels you put into it. It's limited to volume, right? Mm-hmm. So
I think it's a quality issue myself. I mean, my experience when I was in the elevator business was that if you had low test weight, you're going to have quality problems. You're going to have problems keeping the crop. You're going to have problems, you know, with mold and everything.
So it's problem storing it more than anything else?
There's a big problem storing it, especially whenever you look at if you pick it fairly with any moisture in it, and then you try to you know, dry it down and put it away with low test weight, a lot of times you have a really hard time keeping it.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that we've talked about with guys is, you know, if you've got any real low test weight stuff, especially what you're picking early, you might think real hard about delivering it, which I know is maybe counterintuitive. Some guys would want to dry it down on their own if they're mm-hmm. going to pick it. But there, you know, there's a lot of early drying deals too, because there's a fair amount of demand for early corn right now.
Right.
So
guys are going to be after it.
I agree. There's also an issue on accounting for it later, I think, because you have less bushels in a bin than you do if you have the higher test weight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it's not an issue, and I think this is right, because I've checked with the folks on campus, the livestock dietitian folks, and it's not an issue, generally speaking, for livestock until it gets really low test weights. I think dairy is under 48 pounds, and maybe as low as 46. I can't remember exactly, but
mm-hmm.
So can we account? So I'm trying to think. Given what these two guys have said about the storage and movement of it, does that account for probably disappearance too? That we just have more, obviously we just have more crop go bad and doesn't get used. Is that right?
It can.
Yeah, it can. If you ask me.
You're still on radio.
It can have an impact, but yeah, you know, I think this 2010 crop was a pretty good feeding crop. It was way better feeding crop than what the 2009 crop was. The 2009 crop, that move to 1.7 billion bushels at the end of the 9-10 marketing year was a result of 2010 crop moving backwards. So we had to make some adjustments in there somehow, somewhere, someplace. Otherwise, you start counting bushels twice. So there had to be some adjustments on the supply side of bringing that crop, that 2010 crop, into the balance sheets. Or like I said, we would have been counting some bushels twice. And I wonder how that is going to impact our stocks number as we get into when we get the September 1 stocks number. I'm honestly not sure how it's going to have an impact, but I know it's going to.
So you're saying that 2011 crop's going to be counted on the September 1 report, so we've got the same old, same old?
It kind of feels that way.
Well, that makes USDA look kind of good if that happens, doesn't
mm-hmm.
it?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think this year will be as bad as last year,
no.
because we won't have as many bushels that were harvested early. But last year, we sat around and talked about it a little bit right after that stocks report, and I said point blank, there's no way that that could have been segregated out. It's just really tough to tell what was the old crop and what
exactly.
was the new.
Exactly. There was 800 million bushels of corn harvested before September 1.
Right.
And guys were dying for it so that they could blend it off with a really poor 09 crop.
There was a lot of junk corn that elevators were stockpiling, just waiting.
Yeah, so are you telling me that we didn't use it? That's crazy.
I know, I agree.
Man.
All right.
All right, guys.
Hey, thanks for, thanks for everything.
Thanks for your efforts there. That's good information on that tour.
Yeah, thank you. Hey, you know, the reason that I took too long answering the one question. Sorry about that, guys. The reason I hung on is just real quick on beans. You know, USDA is 41.4. We went up to 41.8. The reason that we did that is, now, number one, the USDA's number at 41.1 is still in our range, okay, because we put a plus or minus 2% on it, and the bottom of the range is at 41 bushels. So 41.4 is still in the range. But the reason that we went up is because we have never seen a healthier bean crop. Nobody talked about disease. Nobody talked about insect pressure. I had two fields where the aphids were something that should have been taken care of up in South Dakota. But the health of that bean crop, if it does get a rain, it's got a chance of impressing us and coming in pretty heavy. But it's got to get a rain. It's got to get that rain.
So. It's got to get a rain by when? The couple. When was it?
Ten,
we got
10
a
days.
Yeah,
ten,
we got a Labor Day rain. Was that in 2007 that salvaged the crop and made it?
Or six.
Or six, somewhere along the lines,
Yeah, so that's exactly right. If we can get a Labor Day rain or even a little bit after that, this bean crop's going to be okay and it's going to come home strong.